With legends of mystery and sometimes terror being handed down from generation to generation, it's small wonder that mountain villagers had a healthy respect for glaciers. But spurred on by scientific curiosity, men began to explore these moving ice fields and unlock their secrets. The Grindelwald glaciers in the Bernese Oberland were among the first to be ventured upon. They are the most accessible of all of Switzerland's glaciers because they come down almost to the farmers' cornfields in the valley. David Egli went up to have a look at the Grindelwald glaciers, and near a busy torrent of water in the lower glacier's narrow gorge, he described what he saw.
Well, Grindelwald, one of the most famous of mountain valleys, is known for its two glaciers. Already in the 12th century, when the valley, which is about 10 miles long, was owned by the convent of Interlaken, and the peasants looked upon these valleys not only with awe at their majesty, but also with fear and terror. The glaciers are looked upon with terror and also with awe, because they're both amazing attractions and also represent a positive danger for the valley. This is because of their growth and recession. Over, say, the last 1,000 years or so, when this growth and recession has been recorded, sometimes these glaciers, which come down on either side of the Schreckhorn, have spread out into the valley, literally eating up forests and, in fact, endangering the houses of the village itself sometime. They've also affected the crops in a funny way. Even though they haven't swallowed up crops, for instance, they've sometimes retarded the harvest by several weeks or even months because of the cold air which comes with them when they're in a period of progression. But the glaciers have also been very useful, and when they go back, for instance, a lot of things can be got out of them. At one time, before refrigeration, ice was taken from these Grindelwald glaciers and sometimes transported as far as Paris to be used to keep, say, fish cool for banquets and so on. And also, when one of these glaciers went back, there came out very good layers of marble, which were quarried, and some of it has been used in the building of the Federal Parliament in Bern and also of the University in Bern. The lower glacier of Grindelwald has been receding for some time past, I should say for very many years now, and during this time men have been working building a passage along the very narrow and spectacular gorge which it has been left behind, so that people can come and look at the actual face of the glacier. This work was started in 1875. The tunneling has taken a long time. As I said, it started in 1875, and as the glacier slowly receded, the work slowly progressed along it. Certain parts of it are lighted up by oil lamps, certain parts are hanging literally over the torrent, which you can hear in the background, and other parts are right underneath overhanging rock. And you look upwards, for instance, and it's as if you were in a chimney, and you just see a speck of light up at the top where the gorge opens up.
The advance and retreat of glaciers up and down the valleys is their most unusual characteristic. In addition to being an object of scientific curiosity, this phenomenon has had its effects on writers. Shelley, Byron's friend, wrote that the glaciers creep like snakes that watch their prey. On the other hand, Mark Twain, the American humorist, treated the glaciers lightly, and in his book, A Tramp Abroad, he even poked fun at their slow speed.
In 1878, Mark Twain and his friend Harris spent 6 weeks on a walking tour of Europe. Switzerland figured prominently in their itinerary. While in this country, they went to Zermatt and climbed the Gornergrat, a peak which looks down upon a sea of ice known as the Gorner Glacier. According to Mr. Twain, his party was very tired when they reached the top, so he hit upon an ingenious and effortless way of getting back down to Zermatt.
I was aware that the movement of glaciers is an established fact. So I resolved to take passage for Zermatt on the Great Gorner Glacier. I marched the expedition down the steep and tedious mule path and took up as good a position as I could upon the middle of the glacier, because Baedeker said the middle part travels the fastest. As a measure of economy, however, I put some of the heavier baggage on the shoreward parts to go a slow freight. I waited and waited, but the glacier did not move. Night was coming on, the darkness began to gather, still we did not budge. It occurred to me then that there might be a timetable in Baedeker. It would be well to find out the hours of starting. I called for the book, but it could not be found.
Mark Twain and his party decided to make the best of the situation. They pitched tents, picketed the animals, milked the cows, had supper, and went to sleep. In the morning, when they arose, he was amazed to see that they had not moved one bit. He thought that the glacier must have gone aground, and so they cut down some trees and, using the limbs as poles, tried to get it moving. Their efforts were fruitless, but then perhaps the thing was moving according to a schedule.
Presently, Baedeker was found again, and I hunted eagerly for the timetable. There was none. The book simply said the glacier was moving all the time. This was satisfactory, so I shut up the book and chose a good position to view the scenery as we passed along. I stood there for some time, enjoying the trip, but at last it occurred to me that we did not seem to be gaining any on the scenery. I said to myself, "This confounded old thing's aground again, sure," and opened Baedeker to see if I could run across any remedy for these annoying interruptions. I soon found a sentence which threw a dazzling light upon the matter. It said, "The Gorner Glacier travels at an average rate of a little less than an inch a day." I made a small calculation. 1 inch a day, say 30 feet a year, estimated distance to Zermatt, 3 1/18 miles. Time required to go by glacier, a little over 500 years. I said to myself, "I can walk it quicker, and before I will patronize such a fraud as this, I'll do it."
So Mark Twain had to retrace his steps to Zermatt by the same route he took up. He returned a frustrated man, but certainly wiser in the ways of Switzerland's rivers of ice. The fact is that he could have picked a faster glacier, because the speeds vary and are determined by different conditions. Dr. Rüttlisberger of the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology points out some of the reasons why.
There are small patches of snow and ice which do hardly move at all. They are also called glacierettes. And then, say, the Aletsch Glacier has been mentioned, the longest in the Alps, where it moves fastest. It's about 200 meters per year. Let's see, that's 700 feet per year. And then very steep glaciers can move even faster, also in the Alps. And there are large glaciers flowing out from the Greenland ice cap into the sea, which move 100 feet per day.
Glaciers move, and when they move, they collect various things as they travel along, mostly rock, which, of course, they carry up in their path. Could you tell me if the things which glaciers carry along with them are important from a scientific point of view?
Oh, they can be very important, yes. For one thing, if they contain rock, which has a certain origin, then it is possible to trace the glacier back to the origin. This is especially important also for the ice ages, where the glaciers have disappeared, and where that has also, so the whole theory was developed because of those rocks the glaciers carried from one origin to a different place.
You mean, for instance, rock which is indigenous to the Alps in Switzerland can be found in the Jura, thereby proving that the glaciers of the Alps traveled as far as the Jura Mountains to the west of Switzerland?
Right, and some of those rocks are huge boulders which no other agent would transport that far. Then there is also pollen is deposited with the snow, and this makes it possible to study the annual, the yearly layering further down on the glacier by pollen analysis.
Do you ever have prehistoric animals which are imprisoned in snow, fish, animals, whatever?
Well, the chances are very small. The ice does not get very old in glaciers of the size of our alpine glaciers. We estimate about a few hundred years. Now, the Antarctic ice, of course, is much, much older. It can be ten thousands of years old, but it's almost, even if there would be some interesting species enclosed in the ice, it would be just no chance whatsoever to find them when they come out in icebergs.
Dr. Rittlisberger, despite the fact that Switzerland's glaciers are not big compared to some of the enormous glaciers in other parts of the world, are they still interesting from a scientific point of view?
Oh, yes, I would say that they are interesting. There are several things which one can just as well investigate on a small as on a large glacier. For example, the mass balance. That means if one wants to investigate whether a glacier increases in a particular year or decreases its mass, not just the position, then one is much better off with a small glacier. The question that is really interesting us in this respect is the relation between climate and the glacier.
One general question, are glaciers in fact around the world receding? One hears talk about this.
We know that for the last century the glaciers were generally larger than they are now, and this is because that the temperature has slightly gone up.
Well, in that case, can we expect that glaciers might one day disappear?
No, I wouldn't expect that. And at high mountains, they will always develop again and always form again. It would have to become much, much warmer that the glaciers would entirely disappear.
Thank you very much, Dr. Rittlisberger.